Good afternoon. This is a recorded show, but if the weatherman is right, it's hot outside. But I'm glad you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK. My name is Roger Metz, and this is a fifth Saturday food show. Fresh South Carolina seafood from McClellanville and some peanuts from Cameron, South Carolina. Remember, you can listen to this show right here on your FM dial, download the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app, or listen to the live streaming feed at www.conservativetalk945.com. Just look on the right-hand side of the webpage and click the Listen Live link. I need to give some kudos to a couple of companies that I do business with, Loophole Optics and American Express. Nah, I'm not getting paid for these remarks, just giving you my experiences. I've always been well served by my Loophole scopes, dating back to the mid-90s, so I decided to try a pair of Loophole binoculars, somewhere around 2004, give or take a couple of years. Anyway, they're pretty good binoculars to serve me well until the right lens fogged in 2008. You know, they have a lifetime warranty, so I called Loophole, told them what happened, they said to send them back. A week later, a package from them arrived in the mail, and it was a brand new, updated pair of binoculars. Those lasted till a few weeks ago when the screw-out eyepiece came off of my hand. I tried my best to fit it back on, but it just didn't work. So, another call, another return, and yes, another package in the mail. This was one of those small mailer envelopes, and inside it was a dear grunt call from Loophole. I thought for a minute and then realized that when I sent the old pair of binoculars back, this small grunt call was looped around the binocular straps. So not only had they returned it to me, they even folded the cord and placed it inside a small plastic bag, which was in another sealed plastic bag with the call. Now that's service. Oh yeah, a few days ago another package came and there was another new, upgraded pair of binoculars. To Loophole, lifetime warranty really means lifetime warranty, including two new pair of binoculars over 10 years. And American Express, you know, I'm not one to complain about service, but if you remember, I went down ICAST in July and had my midnight encounter with the hotel maintenance guy who was working on the door across the hall with his grinder and electric drill. Anyway, I called several times but got no response from the hotel management. So I turned it over to American Express. They tried to resolve the issue with the hotel, but the letter I just received said they had not been able to get any explanation from them. You know, all I wanted was maybe a credit for the one night when I didn't get much sleep. But since I didn't get anything from the hotel at all, I got to give them a bad review and a full refund for both nights I stayed there. Every once in a while, it feels good to have someone else fight for you. End of testimonial time. So today is a taped fifth Saturday food show about seafood and peanuts. Not that I would mix the two in the same pot, but I have been to a seafood restaurant and had hot boiled peanuts as a warm-up. So don't have to call today. Just listen to what's out there and then get ready for a low country boy, boil, an oyster roast, or some other fresh seafood you can get from our local South Carolina waters. And now let's see what's on the calendar for this week. You know, hunting season is just around the corner, and the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources has got their hunter education classes up and running. There's a couple today. We'll skip those because you're not going to be able to make those, but there is a bunch of them out there for September the 6th. So if you're anywhere around, let's see, Blackville, South Carolina, they've got one there at the Edisto Research Center. If you are anywhere around Gaffney, South Carolina, they have a few seats left over at the Cherokee Recreation District location on the 6th. Let's see where else we got. If you're in Spartanburg, they've got a few seats there, the Spartanburg Wildlife Action Center. But there are a lot of them that are full. So if you need that hunter education course before you can hunt this season, you need to go ahead and get into one of those courses, get it completed. Just remember, if you can't make it to an in-class session, you can also take it online. Just go to the DNR website and follow the instructions for hunter education. Ducks Unlimited is having their Greenville banquet September the 11th. That's Thursday. It'll be at the Greek Orthodox Church down on Academy Street. Tickets, $50 a couple, or $50 for single, $90 for a couple. You know, I've been out of a lot of memberships for a long time, and I'm thinking about getting back into these eventually, and Ducks Unlimited will be one of the first ones that I get back involved with. And we also have the Piedmont Friends of the NRA, Thursday, September 11th. They're having their banquet right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. You can go to the NRA website, find out contact information and all. But that's the Piedmont Friends of the NRA, Thursday, September 11th, Greenwood, South Carolina. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you don't have any plans for September the 13th, there are about five or six things you can do. It seems like September the 13th is the kickoff for fall, and we've got a lot of things on the calendar. First of all, if you live over near Sherrall State Park, there's a moonlight canoe float on the 361-acre Lake Juniper. Watch the sun go down, paddle back by moonlight, September 13th from 6:30 to 9:30, Sherrall State Park. You can find more details on the South Carolina State Parks website on that one. Outdoor Recreation Day, right here at Table Rock State Park, September 13th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Lots of things for you to do. Bring the kids out. They're going to have boat demonstrations, live reptiles, a sandcastle contest, geocaching demo, pedal boat races, camping tips, a free DNR fishing clinic, and local outfitters will be hosting demos all day long. So that's Table Rock State Park, right up there in Pickens, South Carolina. And if you go to Table Rock State Park that day, why don't you hang around? Because there's music on the mountain. Enjoy traditional bluegrass music as local musicians gather at Table Rock to keep this inspirational town alive. So if you go to the outdoor day there at Table Rock State Park, why don't you pack your picnic lunch, go out, sit on the lawn, listen to some good bluegrass music. That'll be September 13th from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. So be an all-day thing you could do with your family. Cowpens National Battlefield is having a Living History Day on September the 13th. This is the SC Rangers encampment. They portray the militia and ranging units on the frontier of the South from the 1740s to the 1780s. Live weapons firing demonstrations at 10:30, 11:30, 1:30, and 2:30. That's Cowpens National Battlefield, September the 13th. Oh, yeah. We remember this. Glendale Outdoor Leadership School. If you remember, we had Carrie Hanna on with us talking about their summer camps. Well, they've got a big announcement. They are opening the Packlet and Lawson's Fork Blue Way on September 13th, 8 a.m. They're going to have paddling, music, food, and fun. Some of the activities, stand-up paddle boards, intro to kayaking, roll clinics, kayak fishing demonstrations, and a guided paddle trip. More information on this, go to www.sctgols.org and look for the flyer on the Packlet and Lawson's Fork Blue Way. Now, Blue Way is, of course, a paddling section they opened up on the Packlet and Lawson's Fork Creeks. Backcountry Survival, Musgrove Mill State Historic Site. Have you ever wondered how difficult life was during the colonial period? Well, take your kids out September the 13th from 10 to 12. They can have a ranger demonstration at Musgrove Mill State Historic Site. What to bring? Comfortable shoes for walking, insect repellent, and water. Go to the South Carolina State Park website for more information on that one. If you're an early riser, here's one for you. It's a sunrise hike on Table Rock State Park. It says, be an extra early riser and take a unique moonlit hike up the end of Table Rock Mountain. Tagline on this one is BYOT, bring your own thermos, because there's no coffee shop at the top. Again, that's that's on the 14th from 3 a.m. to 10 a.m., Table Rock State Park, Pickens, South Carolina. Family fishing clinics. There's going to be one down at Sesquicentennial State Park in Columbia, South Carolina. These are free, sponsored by SCDNR Aquatics Division. And it's just a basic, here's how to tie a knot, lure selection, and how to cast. So if you're interested in fishing this fall, and fall is a great time to fish, this one's September 14th, 1:30 to 4:30, Sesquicentennial State Park down in Columbia, South Carolina. A real basic course. Go learn how to fish. There's the music. Hang on to the other side, and we'll be back. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'll be adding those calendar events to the Facebook page. Please check these events before you go just to make sure there haven't been any last-minute changes. And one thing I forgot to say, I got a note from Skytop Orchard. They are having a run on Apple Crisp apples. So if you like those, you better get up there because I don't think they're going to last much past this weekend. This is the fifth Saturday cooking show, and I stopped by in McClellanville, South Carolina last week and visited with Rutledge Leland of Carolina Seafood. Actually, we went to his house overlooking Jeremy Creek, and I want you to listen to our conversation about South Carolina seafood. Okay, well, I am sitting here in historic McClellanville, South Carolina with Rutledge Leland, who is the man at Carolina Seafood here in McClellanville. Rutledge, I appreciate you sitting down with me for a few minutes and doing this show.
Glad to be with you.
Now, you have been a lifelong resident of McClellanville. What's it been like growing up here?
Well, it's really a great place to grow up. I think some of the children around here now probably would maybe differ with me a little bit because there's not a whole lot to do right here in town, but we're pretty close to Charleston and Georgetown, so they got places to go. So you've got the creek, you've got the marshes, you've got the beaches. It's a great place to live.
And it's a great place to visit. I love coming up through here. I come here three or four times a year to buy some shrimp from you. It's a quaint little town, and it's away from everything. So if you like a quiet little place, McClellanville is the place you need to come and visit. Now, and you've been in the seafood industry your whole life.
That's other than going to Clemson and the Air Force. I've pretty much been here in McClellanville doing this all my life.
And we were sitting here talking, and right before we started this recording, you showed me a paper that somebody had brought to you. It's the News and Courier from Charleston, South Carolina, and it's all about Hugo. Tell me what it was like to go through Hugo here in McClellanville.
Well, it obviously was just one of the most unbelievable and terrible experiences anybody could have. We were completely flooded with about a 12 to 15 foot surge of water, which went through the whole town, took all the commercial fishing boats, recreational boats, everything, threw them up in the streets. It wiped out all the commercial and recreational docks, for that matter. So it was just a huge mess, and it took a long time to get back in business.
And we were sitting here, and I met you at Carolina Seafood, and you said, you know what, this is business. If I'm going to do this, I need a good way. So we're actually sitting on the back porch of your house, and you were telling me that now this house, which used to be on the ground before Hugo, is now up another story after Hugo.
We're a full 14 feet off the ground now. That's a FEMA requirement. So we're ready for the next flood, I guess.
Let's hope we don't ever have another Hugo. What did it do to your fishing fleet and the industry here in McClellanville after Hugo?
Well, at the time, it just so happens that we were actually, I guess, at a high tide as far as the seafood industry was concerned. Shrimp were doing real well. There was a pretty big oyster and clam industry going on. Crabbers were doing fine, and it pretty well just shut everything down for about a year. The equipment was gone. The boats that did the harvesting, were many of them were wiped out. So it was just devastating. It pretty well set us back for a year. And of course, with that setback comes debt to get back in business.
Right, right. Future of the fishing industry in McClellanville, from as you see it?
It's changing. We don't handle near as much volume as we used to, and we're handling more seafood locally, which is a good thing. We're finding that more people have found out that we've got a really good product here in all our seafood, the oysters, clams, shrimp, crabs, everything. Maybe it's just we think a little bit better than most places. And the industry, though it's getting smaller, I think is going to be fine, and there's going to be a place for people to stay in it. We're dealing with local people now, which I like.
And that's what this show is all about, is local, and we're as local as you can get right now. I come down here. I used to go shrimping out in the harbor in Charleston, and although it's a fun time with friends and all that, I tell you, it's a whole lot easier to call you up and see if you got shrimp, come down and get a 50-pound box. I still have to head it, but boy, it's some good shrimp. Speaking of shrimp, I know there's a brown and a white shrimp we get in South Carolina. Earlier this year when I came down and got them, I believe the boats were down in Georgia waters getting them because South Carolina had not opened up yet.
That's about right. Yeah, in the spring you normally have what we call our overwintered white shrimp crop. The shrimp that survive through the fall and into the winter, will just kind of hang out in the ocean and in creeks until the spring, and then they start growing again. They spawn in April, May, maybe early June, something like that. And then that's what we hopefully will produce our fall crop of shrimp. Then we have that sort of interim crop of brown shrimp, which nobody's real sure where they come from, but all of a sudden they show up in June and they usually last about 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
And it's very similar in taste, and it doesn't seem to get as big, but it's a great shrimp to eat, and it fills in during the summer season.
Now those April, May shrimp that have overwintered, those were big. I mean, those were some of the biggest shrimp I've seen.
They grow really big in the spring, then they spawn. And that's where your fall, which is the biggest part of our shrimp season, is the fall. And that's where the white shrimp for the fall season come in. We try to limit production on that spring crop somewhat, and certainly let them stay out there as long as we can so they'll get spawned for the spring, for the fall.
Now, the brown shrimp you have in the summertime, what are those sizes?
They tend to run probably about 50 to 60% as big as the white shrimp do. They'll get down into the, say, 30 to 40 count with the head off, sort of thing. Nice shrimp, but not the real big ones like the white shrimp do.
And really with the smaller shrimp, that you're not worried about deveining those, are you?
I don't. Some people think you have to devein all shrimp, but I don't think it hurts a thing to eat the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, now we've gone from the spring, which I got this year, through the summer, into the fall. Now, the fall ones start out real small. The whites at the first season are relatively small.
Right, just like anything else, they're gonna. We hope they don't come into the ocean until they get a little size on them, because they're protected while they're in the creeks. So they'll start coming out middle of September, somewhere along in there, if we don't have some kind of unusual event like a hurricane. They'll get bigger and kind of peak out in late October, early November, something like that.
And that's when they're getting, what, 16-20s?
16-20, 10-15s. We've seen a lot of 10-15s the last few years.
Wow. Those are your grilling shrimp. Those are the ones you want to devein, dehead, stick on a skewer, and put on the grill.
That's the big boys.
That's the big boys. Oyster season. Only in months that end with R?
Actually, that's the way it works. We're opening up. We're not even open in September anymore, so we've not, 1 month, we don't even get to harvest an R. They're opening the season the 1st of October, which I'm in favor of. I'd rather see it when the weather's cooler.
Right.
Rather than trying to deal with oysters in hot weather. I don't think there's really that much demand for them anyway.
Okay.
Most people that eat oysters and roast them and all that rather do it around a fire, and it's kind of hot to do that until you get cooled off a little bit.
You're exactly right there.
Basically October through April is usually when we harvest oysters.
Hey, you said our season doesn't open until October 1st. Is that, that's the Department of Natural Resources that kind of dictates your seasons?
That's correct. I think they work in concert with DHEC. The health people have to look at things too, because there's a certain amount of concern about handling oysters when it's really hot. You have to handle them so differently. They're just better handled in cold weather.
What else do we have right here that's fresh South Carolina seafood you have at Carolina Seafood?
Well, you know, our biggest increase in anything has come in the clam industry. And people in the low country especially seem to be eating a lot more clams than they used to. When I first got into the business, clams are something you gave away if you had a few of them. And now it's a really popular sale item. Most of my retail stores and restaurants all are serving clams now, and we have a heck of a time keeping up with the demand.
Really? Now, you're getting those right here from local waters?
We do it. We do it year round, because we have a lot of people that are raising clams from small seed, and they can do that in the summer. So basically in the summer we have the mariculture clams, and then we pick up about the same with oysters on the wild clams, and we harvest those in the cold weather. So we handle a lot of clams, and they're staying local too, which is a great thing.
That's interesting. I would have never picked your clams coming from here.
We're getting there.
Tell me a little bit of what's happening with the blue crabs.
Well, there are a lot of opinions on that. I don't deal directly with crabs. It's a kind of a different type product that you have to have special handling processes for. and I don't do it. I do know a lot of crabbers and all that, and they say that the supply is just way down. Some people blame it on the peeler crab industry, which has really gotten big, where they take the little soft shell crabs in the spring, and or the soft crabs after being peeled, of course. And to me, that may be hurting the future crop because they're getting rid of a lot of little plant crabs at that during that process. That's where you get your soft shell crabs,
right,
which everybody
right.
talks about in the spring. It could just be overfishing. I really don't know. There are a lot of factors which could be affecting the fact that we just don't have as many crabs as we used to, and the prices are skyrocketing.
Yeah, I've heard that much. So we've got shrimp and oysters, clams, surprisingly, crabs. What else do you have here at the market?
Well, you know, we've actually in McClellanville developed a pretty good little offshore fishing industry. We have the boats that do the snapper, grouper complex. Sea bass is a good product for us. Anything that's legally caught in the federal waters offshore is a really highly regulated industry. Everything is by permit and their quotas and that sort of thing. But we have about 5 boats that do it here. And so we're bringing in red snapper, grouper, tilefish, sea bass. A pretty good variety of offshore fish.
Now, comes to the good part. Shrimp boils, oyster roasts. Now, it's not as hard as a lot of people think to do a shrimp boil or an oyster roast. I know up in the upstate, everybody comes down here to do it because we're all afraid to take it all back and do it where we live.
That's the first part of our conversation. There's some more to come, but if you don't know where McClellanville is, let me try to help you out. It's from Charleston. It's about 40 miles north on Highway 17. If you're in Myrtle Beach, it's about 60 miles south on Highway 17. It's a crossroads with a blinking red light. Not much there, except it's a really quaint fishing village. You do have, between Charleston and McClellanville, you do have the actual start of the Palmetto Trail at the Buck Hall Recreation Area. There's boat landings at Buck Hall. You can get in the Intercoastal Waterway, go to Bulls Bay Fishing. Hampton Plantation is there. The home of Archibald Rutledge is there near McClellanville. You have the Francis Marion National Forest, which is huge, and it's always fun to drive through there, and you got the dirt roads and that sort of thing. But it's not very far to get there. Well worth the trip. The seafood's great. The atmosphere. In fact, if you're listening to this, you can hear when he's talking, you can hear something thump 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 in the background, and that's the fan on his back porch. He graciously went to his house to do this interview, and I really appreciate him doing it. It still amazes me when you call somebody and say, "I'd like to talk to you about this," how willing they are to talk to you, and it makes this radio show very, very fun to do. You meet lots of interesting people, lots of information. It's like an onion. The more you peel, the more you find. There's the music in the background. We'll take a break, come back on the other side, finish up, listen to what he has to say about McClellanville seafood, and we'll go on to some peanuts. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Remember, this is a recorded show. I'm with my friends and family this weekend, and I hope you are too. Having a good time and being careful out there. We're talking to Rutledge Leland at Carolina Seafood, and let's go back and listen to the final part of the interview we did about what's happening with Carolina Seafood in McClellanville.
How long will a 50-pound box of shrimp last if it's kept out of the water in a cooler and on ice? How long will it last?
Well, I recommend taking the heads off as soon as you can.
Okay.
Because there are certain enzymes and things in the head which could tend to affect the rest of the body. So once you've got that head off, it's pretty much like any other meat. Keep it in ice so you've got moisture to keep it wet,
Okay.
keep it hydrated. And I'd hate to put a time on it, but certainly a week to 8-9 days.
Oh, wow.
Is safe,
okay.
As long as it's stirred in ice.
Okay. And oysters, you don't ice oysters down, so how do you keep those?
Oysters just have to be under regulated temperature. DHEC recommends under 45 degrees, and at under 45 degrees, they say that 14 days is very safe.
Wow. So it's very reasonable to come down here, get a load of shrimp, take them home over a week, eat off of them, cook them here and there.
You know, it's always, shrimp is a product which freezes really well.
Oh, it does. Okay.
I mean, and to be honest with you, if you take a shrimp when it's fresh caught and freeze it immediately, you're hard pressed to tell the difference when you thaw it out. Now, if you take your shrimp and keep them for a week or 10 days and then freeze them, then you're going to have a week or 10-day old shrimp. I mean, when you thaw it out. But
right.
If you freeze it the day when it's 1 day old, you're going to thaw out a 1 day old shrimp, and it really works fine.
I
recommend freezing on shrimp. I really do. Oysters, refrigeration is the key. I've always told people I don't think you can eat a spoiled oyster. If it opens up and starts smelling, you're probably not going to be able to get it in your mouth. So,
right.
So you can look at an oyster and pretty well tell if the bill's still tight together, it should be fine.
And shrimp boil, all it is the main ingredients, corn, sausage, red potatoes, and shrimp.
That's the traditional, it's been called everything imaginable. Beaufort boil, Frogmore stew, low country boil. But everybody's got their little variations of might throw a few extra things in it, but what you said is pretty much the basic. It's pretty easy, really. I think if the shrimp are really fresh and good shrimp, they're going to probably bring the flavor out and everything else, and you don't have to add a whole lot of seasoning.
That's exactly right. Oyster roast. Now, I've seen oyster roast in two different ways. I've seen them done where you steam the oysters in a pot, almost in a turkey pot, essentially. It's almost like you're deep frying a turkey. You put a layer of water in the bottom, use your basket, your steamer basket. And I've also seen them done with a fire, a piece of steel plating, and wet burlap over top. Does it make much difference?
I like the latter. I've eaten a lot of steamed oysters, and they're fine. They really are. There are a lot of companies that go out and cater oyster roast, and they've got some really sophisticated-looking cookers and that sort of thing. I personally think a sheet of steel over a fire is about as good as you're going to get. I mean, to me, I don't know why, but that's the way I grew up, and that's the way we always ate them around here. And actually, there's a company here in town that's actually building a cooker which is designed to do that. It has a wood section under it and then a grid where the oysters are actually on a sheet of metal, and so it's not steaming. And he's been real successful with actually selling some of them, and he's catering oyster roast using it.
Wow. How long should you have to steam or cook an oyster before it's ready?
Well, there again, that's a matter of taste. Most people want to see it wide open so they can get at it real easy.
Nah, that's not when they're good. I like it where you have to pry them open.
You'd like to see a little opening starting to happen.
Okay.
You know, and don't get it cooked down too tight. So as soon as you see where your bills are starting to break enough to get a knife blade in there, I think that's time to get them on.
Makes me wish for November and December to get here quickly. Okay, if somebody is in Charleston, they want to know what you've got, what's the telephone number? They can get a hold of you at Carolina?
Our company is 843-887-3713.
And about how many miles? What, about 30-something miles from Charleston up here?
About 35 miles from I-26 and 17, which is kind of where you'd be coming in from the upper part of the state.
And if you're coming up here, you're going to get some seafood, what are some of the other things you could do or see right here in McClellanville that you're not going to see pretty much anywhere else? I mean, you could drive in here, there's Spanish moss hanging from the trees, there's old churches, there's beautiful homes.
Well, you know, that you pretty well described that there's nothing, we don't really consider ourselves a tourist destination, even though we're sort of becoming one, I guess. We're getting a lot of people that we've got some weekend houses that are being rented now, and they're really getting a lot of business. People are spending 4 or 5 days here at a time. Of course, if you've got a boat, or there are people that'll take you out in the creeks, and the lighthouses are pretty interesting to see. Cape Romaine is a beautiful beach, very tightly controlled because it's a bird sanctuary,
right.
And then they don't want too activities going on which will bother the wildlife. But and we got a got a couple of pretty good little restaurants here, and they're selling local tree food. They really try hard to keep local shrimp and fish and stuff on the table. So,
and I'm going to stop at the one right there on Main Street on my way out of town this morning. Yep. Now, if you're going to go downtown, there's only about four or five parking spots along the street. So when you come into downtown, which is, what, about four or five buildings long,
right?
You may have to park in the back. You may have to park down the street and walk back into town.
Well, believe it or not, we have a public parking lot.
Okay, there we go.
I don't think he even has a sign. But if you turn down Casino Street, it's right there behind the Arts Council building. And they've got interesting things there to see, too. And we have a museum. We have the Village Museum, which is really, really a good little small-town museum which documents the seafood industry and the other industries, the logging and the farming and all, which went on in this area. So, but the museum's a real, real good little stop.
Well, so the next time you're in Charleston or Georgetown, Myrtle Beach, we're not too far to get away, and I know a lot of people are going to be driving down the coast this fall to enjoy the cooler weather and the fishing that heats up this time of the year with the mullet runs and all. Take a little bit of time, drive to McClellanville, see what a quaint little town is, bring your cooler so you can stock up on fresh shrimp, oysters, whatever you want to get from the shop there at Carolina Seafood. Stop in and say hello to Rutledge, and I know he'll appreciate you coming down. I appreciate you doing this for me.
Okay, it was fun.
I'll be down this fall to pick up another couple hundred pounds of shrimp.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
And that's not a lie. I'll be down there as soon as the shrimp get big enough to, you know, devein and butterfly, stick them on a skewer and on the grill. I'll be down for another 50 pounds. Maybe another 50 pounds that we can split up between friends like we always do. But really, look for yourself. A low country boil is a pretty simple thing to cook. We've done them here before. I tell you, and the shrimp make the whole difference. Those local shrimp just add something that a frozen shrimp you buy in Ingles just does not. And it only takes a few minutes to roast a sack of oysters. I mean, you can, like I said, most of the oyster roasts I've been to, we're steaming them. Now, some of them have the big commercial steamers, and those are good. But you can do it in your turkey frying pot. It's just remember to watch those edges because you don't want all the juice to leak out. You want all that to be still inside when you pry that shell open. Have everybody else bring drinks and side dishes, and you've got the low country in your own backyard. And like I said in that interview, I quit shrimping in the harbor a few years ago. I think it was the last time I went was the time I fell in at night with my daughter. Taylor, I think, was 6 or 7 at the time. And I said, you know what? It's probably not a good idea for me to be out here doing this at night by myself. And if you have friends to go shrimping, it's always a fun time. But when I can go to McClellanville and buy 50 pounds right off the boat, you know, I'll do it. I still get a workout. I still have to pinch all the heads off of them. And like he said, I freeze mine. And, you know, I can't tell a difference. And from his perspective, you can't tell a difference. And I think the trick is that I put them not with tap water. I'll go buy some bottled water and freeze them in filled Tupperware containers. And they work out just fine. But they don't stay in my freezer for very long. We like good shrimp at my house. And I still like to pick my own oysters. They're public grounds in Charleston. And I even like to break a few and just have to eat them right there on the spot. Fresh, salty, and cold. So, this fall, take advantage of some of the goodness that our South Carolina coastal waters have for us. Now, peanuts. If you don't know by now, I like traveling the back roads instead of the interstates. In fact, I think I'm going to start posting an On the Back Roads blog on the Woods and Water South Carolina website when I do these trips. But this one, I was on a back road, and it took me through Cameron, South Carolina. Now, if you've never heard of Cameron, it's a crossroads town about 40 miles south of Columbia on Highway 176. Highway 176 is one of my favorite avenues to get between Columbia and Charleston without getting on 26 and all the lunatics. But just like when I talked to Rutledge, you know, the look I got from Ryan, he was the farmer, was one I've seen before. And I'm sure he was thinking, what is this crazy person doing taking pictures of the peanuts on the ground in my farm equipment when it's 96 degrees out here? But he was nice. He came over. We talked for a few minutes. And he told me enough that now I can tell you about a little bit about the peanut industry right here in South Carolina. Now, peanuts aren't necessarily a southern thing, but I have never seen a boiled peanut stand up north. Barbecue is just declared the official picnic food of South Carolina, but did you know that boiled peanuts are the official snack food of South Carolina? It's another worthless piece of information, but you only hear it here. So hang on through the break. We got some peanuts to talk about, a little bit of news, and we'll end it for another week. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Again, this is a recorded fifth Saturday food show. We had a good conversation with Rutledge Leland from Carolina Seafood down in McClellanville, and we're going to finish this off with a little bit about peanuts that you might not know. It's on the back roads past a peanut field, and they were harvesting the peanuts, and I had to pull over, take some pictures, talk to some people, and some really eye-opening, if you would, information on peanuts here in South Carolina. Now, they're, not to get too technical, but they're grown in slightly raised hills, I guess you would say, in these big fields down below I-20. And it takes some impressive farm equipment to get them from the field to market. I like John Deere Green, and boy, John Deere Green is everywhere in that section of South Carolina. And you have a machine called a digger. It picks up the peanuts from the hill, moves the whole plant, kind of shakes the dirt out, and then as it rolls it over, it turns it to where the plant is actually down and the peanuts are on top, which is pretty cool to watch it happen. Then you have a peanut combine that comes along behind the digger, scoops up the rows of those upside down peanuts. It separates the peanuts from the plant, and it's an internal thing, and they were really working to adjust the blower to where it didn't blow out peanuts, but only blew out the plant part. I'm not sure how it separates inside, but the peanuts are separated, and they get blown up into a hopper on top of the combine, and the plant part is blown out the back, almost like a hurricane spreader type thing. It's a really neat operation to watch, and I probably took way too many pictures, and I did look like a crazy man out there in 96 degree heat doing this, but these peanuts that we were watching, they've been in the ground about 4 months and were headed straight to a boiling and canning plant in Effingham, South Carolina. Now, Effingham is another one of those names you probably haven't heard much of, but it's 80 miles east of Cameron, or if you know where Florence is, it's 10 miles south of Florence. The name on the cans of boiled peanuts from that plant, Peanut Patch. And I'm sure if you've been in any of local grocery stores and know where the boiled peanuts section, know where the two rows of boiled peanuts are, you'll see Peanut Patch peanuts. So those are the ones that are headed for the boiling. They take them up from the field the same day they harvest them, right over to the Palmetto Peanut Company, which was right across the street from the field they were harvesting, and they get on a truck and take them straight to Effingham. Those are for boiled peanuts, but if you're going to go for dried peanuts, it's a little different harvesting technique and processing. The process for dried peanuts, you leave them in the ground for 5 to 6 months, and when you pick them up, roll them over, instead of going straight to Palmetto Peanut, you leave them out in the field for 4 or 5 days drying, just like you do hay. To be roasted, they must have a moisture content of 10.49 parts per million or less. You see, I was lucky that an older gentleman along with two ladies pulled up beside me as I was taking my pictures. Inside was L.C. Chance, and he was the receiving agent at the Palmetto Peanut Company, which was really neat to have that kind of person pull up and get some information. Palmetto Peanut Company, they did have 176 tractor trailers in 2013, but they added 46 in 2014. They're equipped with natural gas drying rooms in case the peanuts going to the roaster have more than that allowed moisture content. LC told me that from just parts of five surrounding counties, they processed over 30 million pounds of peanuts at that one peanut processing plant. That's a lot of peanuts from just five counties of South Carolina. That's a lot of boiled, roasted, and peanut butter and jelly peanuts sandwiches, if you ask me. Elsie also said you never know what kind of surprise you find in a load of peanuts. He didn't go any further than that, but I can imagine he meant snakes or something like that. Anyway, just thought this would round out this food show, give you an idea of how big a farming industry peanuts are to our state. Now, who's ready for some Cajun bull peanuts? All right. Going to finish up here with a few news stories. For those of you that live up on Lake Wylie, don't be scared. They did spot an alligator. It was written up in the Rock Hill Herald online. Big story. And you have to read through it a little bit, and it talks about a family who's kayaking with their two kids, and they see an alligator lounging on the water. You have to read a little bit, but it comes down and it says the alligator was 20 inches long. So, nobody panic. Lake Wylie's not being taken over by alligators. But it was interesting. You do a little research, and they say that alligators up this far won't survive. Most likely, somebody's pet turned them loose. But it's interesting, when you do a little research, you come up and you find that it's not the first alligator. They've had some 4-foot gators sighted near Elks Park Campground, Rock Hill. There again, DNR says probably illegally dumped since they aren't native to the area. Another case of an 8-foot alligator on Lake Wylie. They finally caught that one. In 2000, they found gator in Crowder's Creek. And in 1999, the Catawba Nuclear Station had some 5 to 7 foot alligators lurking in a nearby lagoon. So, you know, not like you're going to have to watch your toes and fingers in Lake Wylie. But if you do see an alligator up that far, call South Carolina Department of Natural Resources or the North Carolina Wildlife Commission. They'd like to know just so they can, you know, either remove them if they're a nuisance or relocate them if they're not. Let's see. This is a good one, and I've had this one for a while. It seems like I get these stories and I run out of time and have to find something to that's more pertinent to what I'm talking about, or I just simply don't have the time to get to all of them. But this one is a news story about a mayfly hatch in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And this is quite a mayfly hatch. Now, when I was down at the FLW event down in Columbia, that we actually had a little mayfly hatch coming off Lake Murray. And I was watching this mallard duck. She was swimming around the overhanging cypress trees and that sort of thing around the edge. And she was actually eating the mayflies off the leaves. And she'd grab a mayfly and she'd switch, get a little water and wash it down. But this one was really good. This was up in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And said they had their first big mayfly hatch of the season. And I tell you, if you Google the story and look at it, they've got a picture here of a gas station with the lights and all that. And it looks like a snow. You know, when you have those big puffy snowflakes that come down. Well, that's what it looks like. but it's all mayflies. And, you know, the ATM machine covered up with mayflies. The air is just full of mayflies. And, you know, I've never been on a real big hatch like this one, but I will say the one time I was up on the Green River and had a sulfur hatch coming off the river late at night. And if you drive the Green River Cove Road, it runs right along the river. And it did. It looked like it was snowing. There were so many bugs in the air. Now, that's a good thing, because what it says is that the water quality is really good. You don't have these big bug hatches unless water quality is very good. So, at least up in that area, good water quality. And they even have a picture here, and it was reported on SkyTrack Doppler radar. The hatch was so big that it showed up on radar. And if you, like I said, if you Google the story, there's a picture here from La Crosse, Wisconsin, on down south. There is a radar. It looks like a storm moving through the area, and it's all mayflies. So just thought that was something I saw, had it in the stack, and said, you know, this would be a good time to get it out of the way. And here's another one that's kind of out there. A Seattle-based company launches salmon to safety with a fish cannon. Yes, it's true, and you'll love this one. The company, Whoosh Innovations. They said they helped Yakima Nation Fisheries transport hundreds of spring Chinook across the Rosa Dam using an experimental process many have dubbed fish cannon. Of course, cannon, you know, is a question, but they're long, flexible vacuum sleeves. When a fish swims near or is placed in the tube, the suction grabs it, transports it through the sleeve at approximately 10 meters per second. That would be, what, 30 feet, 33 feet a second or so, and to the desired location. Said the procedure is not only safe for fish, it is also one of the most efficient and economical methods of transporting fish across man-made barriers. Now, I don't know if any of you have been around a fish ladder or something like that, but, you know, when the salmon come upstream, they're returning from the salt water, trying to get back to the fresh water to spawn, and then, you know, salmon die. Their whole purpose going back up those rivers is to spawn and then become fertilizer for the whole ecosystem downstream. I saw a lot of this in Alaska when I was there. Just a real interesting little thing. They've got a video here. Whoosh Innovations got to start transporting fruit at high speeds using the same tubes. And after hearing about the difficulties the Washington wildlife officials had with getting fish through dams, the company said it conducted its own tests. Said, we put a tilapia in the fruit tube. It went flying, and we were like, check that out. Oh, me. It says, according to the company, vacuum tubes have a number of advantages over traditional fish passage systems, including less lingering around fish ladders, cheaper construction compared to lifts and locks, flexible configuration, easy setup, and even making it easier for biologists to take samples. So, geez, what else is there out there? Fish cannons. Takes me back to the old days of potato cannon. Compressed air and you got the cannon firing potatoes. So anyway, look for it coming soon to a market near you. Fish cannons. You know, this show is all about getting kids outdoors and all. And there's stories out there and you could go on for days, but there's something out there called eye posture. You may have not heard about it, but it's blamed for surging back pain among young adults. And if you look at a kid who's working with an iPad or hunched over a game console or something, you see exactly what you're running into. Slumping shoulders, slouching middle and lower back, and it's compressing the vertebra. So get them outside. Instead of letting them sit there and pound away on these, get them outside, get them straightened up, get them some exercise. Hey, my buddy Morris was in town. He lives in California. We always spend a few hours at Waffle House when he comes into town, but we were talking about Chuck Norris, and he reminded me that when he was stationed in Afghanistan, there was a board there at the staging area, and every soldier that came through, somebody started putting Chuck Norris jokes up, pinned it to this board, and Morris actually has the board. He brought it home with him because the base closed down, and he said it's several layers deep in Post-it notes, scraps of paper, and anything a soldier could write on while they wait for their outbound transport. So it kind of makes these jokes a little patriotic and even more fun for me. So, Chuck Norris for this week. When the boogeyman goes to sleep every night, he checks his closet and under his bed for, yep, Chuck Norris. Next week, I'm back live in the studio. Hopefully, I have extended a 40-year streak of making opening week dove hunt to 41 years. Other than that, I don't know what else we'll be talking about, but it'll be a good show. Mark your calendar for the start of oyster season. Maybe call in November and see if the big 15-20 size shrimp are available. And make that little side trip down to Carolina Seafood in Quaint McClellanville, South Carolina. I don't know about you, but I can smell the low country boil and oyster roast from here. We're going to talk a little bit about hunting next time. I want to give you we're going to cover it. I want to give you my aspect of why I hunt. We're not going to get too technical, but I want you to know when we get into hunting what we're going to approach it from. There's James. That's another Saturday of Woods and Water, South Carolina. So this weekend, go buy or maybe make your own bull peanuts. Pour a package of salted ones down the neck of a glass bottle of Coke. Be careful over the long holiday weekend. Travel the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. See you next week.